get it going. It's time to get up.
The number one overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to a team yet to be determined, coming from the qualifying round in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
These guys are here to break it all down.
Black lives matter. We should be saying it every day. It's not political. This is not a political statement. It's a human rights statement.
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
This is the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It is Monday, June 29th. Yeah, Canada Day almost upon us. What's going on? James Cebulski with you. Perry Sulkowski is on holidays for the week. That means we bring in the resident producer. We go to the bullpen. Mike English in the house all day long. How are you, sir?
Very good, very good. Very deep into the bullpen, broadcasting from my palatial downtown studio. Shoebox, I should say. Thanks for taking me aboard. Sulkowski enjoying a week off and looking for a little fun over the course of this week.
You know, as a suburbanite for the better part of the last 7 years in South Delta, I went into Vancouver on the weekend and on Friday.
You're at Brandy's?
Yeah, I left my wallet there. but I've been coughing nonstop. I don't get it. And by the way, can we just point out that, like, maybe catching COVID-19 might be just among other things that you might catch at Brandy's?
Yeah, it's not the most sterile kind of place, even before COVID-19.
Not that it dissuaded me from ever visiting that establishment in the past as well, but nevertheless, man, it was like a ghost town in the city on the weekend. I don't know if it's a lot of people just getting out because, you know, end of the school year, so you've got, you know, obviously a lot of people that are teachers, but, you know, you're kind of starting to hit, you're now into summer. I feel like a lot of people getting out of Dodge. I don't know, just felt like a ghost town in the city on Friday.
You know, I was up in the Okanagan, exact opposite. It's like it's wide open, James. Like, it's unbelievable. Social distancing, a mere memory, doesn't happen anymore. Like, and of course, they had a huge storm there on Saturday, flooding the entire waterfront.
Yeah,
I saw some of it on the news there. But yeah, like social distancing seems almost out of mind up there. I mean, you've got license plates coming in from Alberta, people holidaying. I mean, it was the first weekend that had been opened up under phase three. And people obviously took advantage of it. And it was a very, very crowded Kelowna on the weekend.
Well, I think a lot of people had booked. I know there were a few people that we knew that had booked places to go up to Kelowna just to get away, a little holiday. And so that had been, and just, you know, and I think some of the prices, the deals are out there in some regions that, let's do this. Like, we're not going to Miami, you know, we're not going to Maui this year. We're not going to Mexico. So, people seem to be relaxing. We're also in a pretty good spot provincially, but yeah, it's interesting that you definitely see the extremes, right? Some people that are still very protective of their bubble, and then some people are just like, the war is over. Here's what we got coming up over the next 3 hours here on Sportsnet 650. We've got a lot of hockey talk we're going to get to. Evander Kane from the San Jose Sharks, former Vancouver Giants, going to drop by just after 8 o'clock. Evander's taking part in a very interesting series that drops on the Uninterrupted a little later on this evening. A discussion on race, Mike, and Evander Kane's going to join us to kind of weigh in on that, and also talk a little hockey, because boy, oh boy, this weekend was an intriguing one from a hockey standpoint.
That was crazy watching. I actually caught some of that. Well, I caught the entire lottery. Wasn't planning on it, but it just happened to work out where I could sit in front of the television and amuse myself for 1 hour. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad I didn't miss it. It was about as intriguing when Bill Daly walked out with 8 cards rather than 7. So you knew something was up. And I certainly didn't imagine it was going to end the way it did. But I'll tell you what, it was intriguing. And I know the NHL is taking a little heat, even from its former employee, like Brian Burke. But you know what? I found it intriguing, and I don't mind it. I don't mind the way it ended. I think I have no issue with it.
It's just the most NHL thing. We'll fire it up here in just a quick second. Corey Hirsch, Sportsnet's 650 hockey analyst, will drop on by just after 7. We'll dive into some Canucks conversation there. Wayne Scanlon, who covers the Ottawa Senators for Sportsnet.ca, will also drop by coming up at 6:30 this morning. We'll get into it with Wayne and just, how do the Ottawa Senators feel? A team that can desperately use a win. I guess you could still find some silver linings, but... man, they want Lafreniere. You would think, in terms of the marketing benefits, that what Lafreniere could have brought to that franchise, I guess it's still possible based on how the ping pong balls can still unfold. But 650-650 is our text line. At Sportsnet 650 is where you can find us on both Twitter and Instagram. And this, my friends, is Now You Know.
We're dropping knowledge this early in the morning.
I am smart. S-M-R-T.
This is Now You Know on the Starting Lineup. Here's James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
Well, Mikey, you touched on the draft lottery and the ping pong balls and how they fell. And this is how the final result ended on Friday night as the NHL had their first event in 108 days since the season had gone on pause. And this is how the conclusion, the climax, all came out.
The number one overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to a team yet to be determined, coming from the qualifying round in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And that means that the Los Angeles Kings will select number two overall. We started out tonight with seven teams dreaming of getting the number one pick, and now suddenly 16 qualifying round teams and their cities who cheer for them are in play to get the number one overall pick.
Oh, man. How about, of course, it's the most National Hockey League thing that could happen because, hey, they're trying to just figure out. It's like, what? How many weeks has it been now since the NHL said, oh, we hope to get the hub cities whittled down in about 3 or 4 weeks? Well, that was, what, 5 weeks ago now? The Canucks suddenly very much alive for the top overall pick, and so are 16 other teams chasing the Stanley Cup at the moment after the lottery balls landed on, yes, the placeholder team. So, after all of that, we still have a gray area when it comes to the National Hockey League's first overall pick and where Alex Lafreniere will go. So we got to wait another few months. So teams that could have used that top overall pick, they get scooted down while a few heavyweights could ultimately land the top pick. Any bet for, Chicago, Montreal, you know how they kind of appeased and modified the whole NHL schedule and allowed some of these heavyweights to get a chance to get a crack at the Stanley Cup because they're big markets. It is so silly that a team in this conversation is going to ultimately land the pick. And then secondly, and I bring this back locally here, Mike, Canucks fans, like, are you legitimately kidding me right now? That 5 years away from the playoffs, and now some people are asking for a loss against the Wild in hopes of a 12.5% chance of winning the lottery? Are you kidding me? This is crazy talk. All this tank talk for the last how many years, and people are still... I don't know if we've just become accustomed in this market to just losing and chasing prospects, but suddenly people are more excited about the idea of having a 12% chance of winning a lottery that the Canucks never do well with lottery history. Have we not learned anything from history? But now people are thinking, hey, you know what? I might be okay with the Wild kind of bounce on the Canucks here in this play. Around because we have a 12% chance of maybe winning the lottery. It is
12 and
unbelievable.
A half, James. 12 and a half, not 12, 12 and a half.
This to me was ridiculous. And Brian Burke, Mike, Brian Burke took aim at the draft and how it ultimately looks. I mean, look at this. The LA Kings move up to number two overall. The Senators go third, and that's the San Jose pick. So they actually climb up on that. You know, Detroit drops all the way to fourth. Detroit was awful this year. Absolutely awful. You think they liked that, selling that to a market that's already having a tough go these last few years? They dropped a fourth. The Senators pick is down to fifth. Like, that's how it looks. That is ridiculous. Brian Burke took absolute aim at this lottery, and I totally agree. Listen to this.
There should only be five teams in the draft lottery. The notion that a team could finish, just miss the playoffs, and pick, you know, as high as two or three or one is crazy to me. I really don't. I think the league gets everything right, or almost everything right. this makes no sense to me. And it's been my position for years, by the way. So tonight, it should have just been the seven teams that are not in the play-in round. Do it that way. Give the teams that need the most help the best players. And I think this result is nothing short of a disgrace.
So Brian Burke calling it a disgrace. And I just thought, man, it was – there's too many teams that are getting a crack at number one. This is not the lockout season that was canceled, 405. You know, I had one buddy who suggested, do the bottom five teams in the lottery for the first pick, bottom eight for the second, and then all non-playoff teams for the third. You know, Brian also suggested an idea a while back. We talked about how if you win the lottery, like if you get the first overall pick, you can't pick again for 3 years. But go to the bottom five teams. It's as simple as that for the top overall pick. We don't need to be including teams that are 12th or along those lines. But this placeholder team, man, it just, for anybody that sat there and watched it, if you're at all critical of the league, it was an opportunity to kick the league in the A double crooked letter, Mike. It was ridiculous. And then for Canucks fans to sit there and think, hey, go wild? Come on, man. Are you really a fan?
Okay, I don't disagree with Berkey's premise at all. I mean, if you're going to do this lottery, do it with the bottom seven teams. But they chose, under these circumstances, the COVID circumstances, to change the format. So that's what they did. It's an unusual circumstance. The whole year's been unusual. So the fact that this happened the way it did doesn't totally surprise me and doesn't offend me in any way at all. I don't mind it. I find it somewhat intriguing. And I don't think you necessarily have to reward a team for tanking and finishing dead last and generally being an embarrassment to the league, i.e. Ottawa. Now, I feel bad for the fans. I don't feel sorry for the organization, the way it's being run. And so I don't think they're obligated to be rewarded with a first overall pick. But they still get two good picks, and I don't know. They'll do okay. They aren't going to get the guy they want, but I still think getting two top picks is reward enough for what's gone in Ottawa. I know you disagree. You're an Ottawa guy, but you know what? It didn't offend me at all. The only thing that would offend me is if the Edmonton Oilers actually win first overall.
Yeah, so what happens then? That's possible. I don't think it's that crazy that Chicago could suddenly pull off an upset in a five-game series over the Oilers. The Oilers are the more talented team, obviously, with McDavid and Draisaitl, but is it not conceivable that a team that's got a core that has won three Stanley Cups could not bounce Edmonton? So then how does everybody feel with that? Or, or would people be appalled? Like, what if Chicago gets it? Like, what if Chicago gets that? Because Edmonton or Chicago are going to get a legitimate crack at that top overall pick, right? One of those two teams are going to get bounced, and then what happens? Like, how are people going to feel about that, right? I mean, imagine Chicago gets it. Like, Chicago had the third overall pick last year. I mean, we've seen instances in the past. Look at Philadelphia climbed up a couple of years ago and got Nolan Patrick, right? I mean, last year, same thing, where, Jack Hughes goes first overall to the Devils. The Rangers with the second overall pick. Were those the worst teams in hockey? Not so much, right? Like, teams...
Let me ask you this, James. If the Canucks do get first overall, you still have a big issue with the draft?
I trade that first overall pick to Ottawa for the third and the fifth, and I probably find another way to get it.
Just out of fairness.
And I'm not even hesitating. I'll legitimately... hey, Lafreniere sounds like he's going to be a great young player, but you know what? I think Vancouver, you could really hit a home run. I think you could trade down from Lafreniere and go grab the third and the fifth overall selections, and you could potentially grab another, maybe a roster player or another top prospect for that first overall pick. Now, how does your prospect pool look like if you get 3, 5, and maybe another blue chipper? Say, like, maybe it's a Josh Norris or somebody along those lines that the Senators might be willing to part in order to have the opportunity to have that bilingual star and have a version 2.0 when they took and swung for Alexander Daigle back in 1993. I tell you what, if I'm Vancouver, you get that first overall pick. Like, hey, look, it's okay. Hey, I think a lot of people kind of had that perspective to say, hey, it's okay to cheer for the Canucks and still hope for the first. Man, that's just logic, right? Hey, you got an outside chance at it. Okay, it's a beautiful consolation prize if the Canucks wound up getting bounced. But the idea to just immediately say, hey, I'm pulling for the Wild. Come on, Canucks. tank this so we can go get the first
overall pick. I don't get that at all. Like, I want to see him win a couple of playoff games or win the series. Like,
you haven't been in the playoffs in 5 years.
Enough of the development. Let's move on.
100%. Like, this was probably one of the most agonizing and painful stretches in the history of the 50 years in the existence of the Vancouver Canucks. And people were legitimately, you know, pulling for, after all of that. Like, man, did you just forget what you have gone through as a franchise? And to do it in an era of social media where, man, becoming a Canucks fan, it was hard. Man, it was hard to pull for this team. Just how toxic the environment, just even to be as a fan, it just, fans were bickering at each other, you know, to go through, watch the losing. And then all of a sudden, now you want this team to fold in the first round, and a first time you've seen a playoff appearance since 2015, and you're going, wow, well, you know that 12.5% chance, it just, it rings true. Anyway, I think the lottery was flawed. It needs to be cleaned up. You know what?
It's a one-off. It's never going to happen again.
Is it? Because it did happen. It did happen. Like, why are those teams even in the mix, Mike? Like, again, I'll go back to Brian's theory. Do it for the bottom five. Like, the five crap teams, the teams that need legitimate help. Like, do you think all these teams, like, that are in a position to tank right now, you think they love it? Like, that is not exactly a business plan for success to just all of a sudden say, hey, you know what? We're going to be serving hot, steaming garbage at our restaurant for the next few years. But you know what? Ride it out, because in a few years, we're going to have some really good stuff on the menu here, guys. But just sit tight. Like, fingers crossed. And you need luck in order to right your ship. Like, it's just, I don't know. Go with those bottom five teams. That's my two cents on this. Now you know.
Now you know that.
All right,
you know,
where are you
going? Staying with hockey, and this also affects the Canucks to a certain extent. Well, it does, actually. Being discussed in Russia right now with Putin and his boys, there's a bill put before their parliament called the Tretiak Bill. And this bill being put before parliament means they don't want any professional athletes leaving Russia under the age of 23 unless they fork over some dough to get out of the country. Now, this is going to go through, and while it's focused on all sports, it's obviously being ultimately focused on the sport of hockey. They're tired of developing the young players and then having them go to the NHL. So now they're saying, okay, if you're going to go to the NHL, somebody's going to pay us for all the years we put in developing you. So now they aren't going to put the onus on the teams, not the Canucks, for Podkolzin. They're going to put the onus on Podkolzin himself, saying, if you want out of Russia, you write us a check. And that's how it's going to happen. Now, Podkolzin could go to the Canucks and say, hey, in order to get me out of Russia, you're going to have to fork over some more money in my contract to get me out of there, or the Canucks will have to pay it. But this is what is being discussed. Ultimately, it will go through. And probably, big picture, it won't affect key players like Podkolzin or Kaprizov, who's going to go to Minnesota, simply because the players are so elite, the NHL teams will spend whatever they have to spend to get them over here. But it may stop middling players coming over, playing in the American Hockey League and trying their luck there, because NHL teams won't pay that money, and the players themselves aren't going to write a check simply because, well, you know what, I may not make it, so I don't want to spend the money to go over there. So this is what's being discussed in Russia, and it may cause a little flux. There is no transfer agreement between Russia and the NHL, not the same as the NHL has with all the European teams. So this has been out there for a while now, and now the Russians have decided this is what we're going to do, which is, James, somewhat softer stance than what they've had in the past when they used to, what, kidnap, blackmail, threats of bodily harm, that sort of thing. They've gone a little softer now. And now
money, money, man. Everybody's a capitalist these days, right? Everybody wants to make money. I understand the logic, and I think it's just, man, the finder's fee, right? It's the finder's fee here. It's the finder's fee there. Will it gain traction? Will it ultimately go? And will it ultimately happen? I don't know, man. Like I, you know, and I think if players ultimately want out, they'll find a way out. If they want to go play overseas, the KHL has established a pretty good league. Would you not say the second best hockey league in the world?
I would say no. I would say no now, simply because their salary cap is down to about $12 million US. All their key players are fleeing the country in order to play over here. Well, you've got some middling guys in the American Hockey League, Nick Goldobin, Reed Boucher, going over there to fill the vacuum and make some decent money over there. But nobody is making any big money over there. And that's why they all want to come to North America now, because that's where the dough is.
So what's the second best league?
American Hockey League, if it ever gets up and running again.
You think the American League still would?
Absolutely.
Would supersede,
in my
the
opinion,
Russian
it
league?
Is.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm totally sold on that. I guess if you had a best of seven series, you'd probably give them a run. But I think there was a stretch. Money talks. Money talks.
I mean, there's some high-end talent
over
there.
I think Cooler. Yeah, I think Cooler has
a lot of middling guys.
I'm sure there'll be a finder's fee, or there'll be some sort of, you know what, you pay your dues. Like, you know, Pod Colson had two more years, right, when he was drafted. I could see a scenario like that. You got to serve your time, your penance, or your the term of your prison time, however you want to describe. Now you know.
Oh, you didn't know.
I love how the New England Patriots dropped this yesterday that had everybody talking from a football standpoint. But the news comes down that the New England Patriots were fined. For Spygate 2, right? They get fined over $1 million. They lose a third-round pick in next year's draft by the NFL following the investigation into the filming of the Bengals sideline late last year. So you remember that story about the whole Patriots production crew?
Oh yeah,
we do it. We've got our reality TV series, and then the Bengals security's somebody looks at, like, what are you filming? And then they kind of look at it, and it's like, oh, you've been basically shooting the sideline. What are you doing? Oh, we were just getting some different looks. Just like the worst experience. And anyway, so the investigation's complete. Patriots fined $1 million. They lose a third-round pick. But nobody's talking about that yesterday because, well, the Pats signed Cam Newton to a one-year deal. So Cam's 31. He played just two games last year, coming off foot surgery. But you know what? He immediately makes this team better than where they were the day before, right? I mean, to have the uncertainty with your veteran quarterback, Brian Hoyer. Cam's a three-time Pro Bowler. He's a former MVP. You know, 31 is not an old quarterback by any stretch. This move makes sense. I feel like a lot of people tried to connect the dots on this for months, especially after the Pats got ripped for not drafting a quarterback back in April, Mike. This was, I don't know, it's a prove-me year for Cam Newton. He's betting on himself here with the one-year contract, but I think it also makes a lot of sense. If he's got his mobility still, I'll tell you, this is an element that the Patriots never had under Tom Brady in terms of having a guy who can actually move with the football at the quarterback position. Now, they also got six Super Bowls with Tom Brady, so I think they've done just fine. But you've got significantly younger with Cam Newton. I don't mind this gamble here by the Pats, and I don't mind the gamble by Cam Newton either.
It's funny, we had Brock Hewitt on a couple of months ago or a few months ago, and his biggest criticism of Brady is how much he had slowed down behind center. Obviously, that addresses this issue. Got a question, though, for you. Do you think the Patriots purposely held off on naming the signing of Newton, knowing that they're going to get fined? And so when they were fined, they decided to announce the signing of Cam Newton to overshadow the fine and all that stuff?
Oh, it's hard not to think with the Patriots.
That's brilliant if they did. Absolutely.
Well,
brilliant.
And that's it, right? I mean, this is a team that, you know, you can look at them and you could paint a picture of being pretty nasty cheaters with the whole Deflategate, Spygate 1, Spygate 2 during this run. But nobody will remember that years from now. All we will remember is, you know, six Super Bowl championships during the Belichick-Brady era. And I think that, you know, this story's already kind of been nudged to the side because what are we talking about more? We're talking about Cam Newton.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, it's 24 minutes after 6 o'clock. We'll get into some other stories. A great story in golf from a Canadian standpoint we'll get into a little later on. Baseball news, the Jays, man, how about this? Like, you've got Dunedin, Florida, and the rest of the state of Florida just exploding with COVID-19 cases right now. And there's talk now that the Jays are getting set to play and charter a flight out of Florida to come into Toronto to play their season and get ready for a Major League Baseball campaign in Toronto. Yeah. That's hey, we got a flight from filled with people in Florida right now coming up. How does that make
baseball
any sense?
Doing, man? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and it's not exactly a bubble that they're really operating under with Major League Baseball compared to what they've talked about in the National Hockey League and the NBA. We'll get into that. 650-650 is our text line as well. But we're going to head to our nation's capital. Man, the Ottawa Senators had high hopes thinking that they might have, you know, maybe even 1-2 going into the draft for this particular year. Didn't quite happen that way. Wayne Scanlon has covered this franchise pretty much since day one. We'll join Wayne in the nation's capital to get a sense of how Senators fans are feeling after the weekend. And we'll do that next right here on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Here you go, Pierre. You'll love this one. If you could trade 3 and 5 for one, would you?
No comment.
This is the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
Oh, 6:31. There was Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick from the 31 Thoughts podcast immediately after the NHL draft lottery Friday night, asking the Ottawa Senators general manager Pierre Dorion, would you take 3 and 5 and package those in an attempt to grab that first overall pick? Dorion, you know, very cheeky with a no comment response in that particular. I'll tell you what, and there you go, for all you Canucks fans that were asking this morning on Twitter, Mike, this is what we're asking. As a Canucks fan, what would you rather happen in the play-in round? Canucks beat the Wild, chance at a number one pick. Right now, 61% of you say, I'll take the Canucks beating the Wild. Almost 40% of you, though. Man, this is like a 60-40 split, effectively.
Don't get it.
That you would sooner take a chance at a number one overall pick. Your 12.5% chance you would sooner take that than the Canucks beating the Minnesota Wild. 650-650. You know what, man? For anybody that's choosing that chance at a number one pick, please explain yourself. Please. I'd love to get the logic behind this. 650-650 is where you can text us. But I'll tell you what, if the Canucks did indeed fall to the Wild, and indeed the luck went their way and they landed the first overall pick, I am immediately calling the Ottawa Senators and saying, all right, what do you want? What are you prepared to give up? And it's going to start with 3, and it's going to start with 5, and we're going to see what else we can poach from there. But
I'm taking Louis.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess you could potentially find a way. They would certainly have the cap space to pull that off. Yeah, it's a good call. I mean, would you rather clear up the cap space? And especially considering the fact, Mike, that here's a team that, I mean, the cap situation now going forward with for NHL teams, what they're talking about, that's another complicated matter. Nevertheless, we head to our nation's capital and check in with Wayne Scanlon from Sportsnet.ca, who's been tracking the Senators pretty much since day one and even before. Wayne, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you, Steve-O?
Excellent, thank you. Nice to catch up after all this time. Give me a sense. I mean, man, I always go back to that Mighty Casey at the bat sometimes, that wonderful poem or story, and sometimes I do think that Mudville is Ottawa based on the history and the run in these last few years with the Senators. How are people feeling after the ping pong ball has played out?
I think they've recovered a little bit. I think, you know, we have to pick winners and losers, right? I mean, that's what the lottery thing is all about. And so when Ottawa's in that situation with the final three cards, and then that third card gets turned over, and there you see that Senators logo. I think it was a huge, huge letdown. I think we saw Pierre Dorion's face on national television. He looked rather sunken, you know. But very quickly, I was on the Zoom call with him a few minutes later. He rebounded, and for good reason. I mean, they've got they've got the two highest picks in terms of having two together at 3 and 5 that they've ever had. And this is a particularly good draft, especially the first 5 or 6 or 10 players. They really can't go wrong. I heard an analyst this morning saying that the Senators could pick two names out of a hat, you know, once you get past Alexis Lafreniere, and they'd probably do just fine. So, you know, I think at 3 and 5, they're still in a very, very good position, and with some good talent they have down in the minors, things are looking a bit brighter here.
Hey, Wayne, Mike English here. A quick question for you. I know the draft didn't go the Senators' way, but just your own personal thoughts on how the draft was formatted. Obviously, it didn't fall in Ottawa's favor in terms of the top pick overall, but just your thoughts on the overall format. I know it's been a wonky year to begin with, but and the way this ended was a little wonky, but just your thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, it did. Mike, it did seem to fit with 2020, where just everything kind of goes out the window and everything's changed. And to see that, I don't think the NHL had this in mind. You know, maybe a placeholder was going to get in there somewhere, but for that placeholder team to have the number one spot, you know, I think people were kind of angry. I think they were confused. I suppose teams that are now thinking about being one of those placeholders and their fan bases can get a bit excited thinking, you know, this number one pick, who's a spectacular player, could fall into our lap here. So, I mean, that adds a new wrinkle and I think is going to make it really enticing down the road if we get to the play-in games and then those 8 teams that get eliminated all have an equal shot at Alexis Lafreniere. That's pretty exciting. But I think for the drama that night, I think most fans would say they would have enjoyed, and I think the commissioner himself might have enjoyed seeing it wrapped up and having those bottom 7 teams kind of have at the top few picks in the draft.
Wayne Scanlon talking Ottawa Senators hockey here on Sportsnet 650. And so we heard from Pierre Dorion in the conversation immediately following on Friday night, where Elliot Friedman had asked Pierre, you know, would you take 3 and 5 and try to make a move to get up there? It's hard not to think that Lafreniere and it came up on our show on Friday, but Wayne, when you think of the market value, at least once Alexander Daigle was drafted in 93, there was that sense, man, that bilingual star that would be perfect for the market. Is there not that sense that the currency that Lafreniere would have, and not just Montreal, but even in Ottawa, I would think that they'd be open for business to try to make that move, wouldn't they?
I think so. I'm not sure any team's going to move to take 3 and 5. And give up Lafreniere, but I'd have to think it's a possibility. As I say, I don't think they can go wrong. I mean, there's Byfield and Stützle. There's a couple of really good defensemen, and Sanderson and Drysdale. I mean, there's some really good options. And I think for a team like Ottawa, with a chance to get 2 impact players instead of just one, you know, there's nothing wrong with them sitting firm at 3 and 5, but there's no question, had they got that first overall pick the other night, and they'd have an entire summer to build a marketing program around Lafreniere. I went on Google Maps to see how far his home is from Ottawa, and it would take an hour and 49 minutes to get from Saint-Eustache on the west side of Montreal to Ottawa. So, I mean, next to the Montreal Canadiens, this would be his home team. You know, I mean, his family would be here. It would be just a, as you say, a bilingual superstar right here that Alexander Daigle kind of flunked the audition. You know, that was supposed to happen way back in 93. It didn't quite pan out. He had a decent rookie year, and he kind of flamed out after that. I think we know that these young players now, they come up, and they're so well-equipped. Most of them are really good two-way players. Lafreniere is one of the best two-way players in the Quebec League. I think he's going to step right in and play somewhere in the NHL next year. So there's no question that would be very enticing for Ottawa to be able to make that kind of a move.
Now, you said Lafreniere could step right in and play in the NHL next season. We don't know when that season is going to begin. So a player like Lafreniere, or even any of the top 5 picks, what do you anticipate happening once this draft happens, which we assume will be sometime in October. I mean, there's been rumblings that these players may play in Europe. We don't know when the Canadian Hockey League is going to start, if it starts. Have you heard anything in that regard?
No, but I think there's going to have to be something. I know we talked to Pierre Dorion about this. What are you going to do? You've got all this young talent. I mean, they've got a really strong team down in Belleville, but these young players have to be playing. And, you know, one of the things that he is kind of working on in terms of communication with the NHL is just making sure that these teams that aren't part of the play-in and aren't part of any potential playoff down the road that are going to be sitting idle for months. We could be into next year before
10 months.
The next. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they played their last game on March 11, right? So you're talking about, you know, almost a full year. So, you know, I think they're going to have to develop some kind of little mini competition, maybe among rival NHL teams, some camps. Maybe the European kids will stay in Europe and play over there. I think it's like everything else with this year, kind of all bets are off. Be creative. Think about your options. These guys have to play. I mean, the one thing that I will say is that they're finding ways to get on the ice right now, even if they're in small groups. You know, there's rinks around Ottawa that have had some professional players at it, and major junior players and up-and-coming kids. I know a competitive minor league player on my street was playing in Gatineau because Gatineau rinks have opened up a little bit sooner than Ottawa, and they're allowing more kids on the ice. So I think there will be options, and more are going to open up, we hope, if things get better later in the year.
Scanner, thanks so much for doing this morning. Appreciate to take the time, and nice to catch up with you and keep up the awesome out there on sportsnet.ca as well.
Anytime, guys.
Awesome. There he is, Wayne Scanlon, keeping close track of the Ottawa Senators and recapping what the weekend has looked like for a team that has desperately felt like they needed a win. It seemed like it was going that way. And, you know, it's still a decent consolation prize, as Wayne kind of points out. You've got the third and the fifth overall selections. We'll see where it goes ultimately. You know, whether or not, and depending on which team ultimately lands that top overall spot, you know, they might be in a position of strength, right? You know, to say, hey, you know what, maybe we are open for business and we'll move that number one overall pick and we'll take 3 and 5. I mean, as much as you can point out to say, hey, Olli Olevi was that fifth overall selection for the Canucks in 2016, Mike, fifth overall selection 2017, Elias Pettersson, right? So you can get some impact players in that top five, especially at the 3 and 5 spot.
Absolutely. And you know what? As we mentioned earlier, the cap space. I mean, you use cap space as a weapon. They're going to lose Clark MacArthur, and they're going to lose Ryan Callahan, which is basically dead money on their roster. They're mm-hmm. eating that because they have to get to the cap floor. They lose that $10 million. So they have to take on salary in order to get to the floor, let alone the cap top. So there is room there for Ottawa. They need to take on some contracts, and there's a lot of contracts out there that a lot of teams would simply like to dump.
Yeah, look no further than Louis Erickson here in Vancouver, as
exactly.
You mentioned a few minutes ago. All right, 6:43, Corey Hirsch, Sportsnet 650 Canucks analyst, will drop by in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll talk to him. Evander Kane, also slated to join us just after 8 o'clock as well. Great weekend for Mackenzie Hughes, who picks up a nice big payday. We'll get into that story. Plus, the Toronto Blue Jays playing at home. It sounds like it's happening. We'll get into that next here on Sportsnet 650.
Just look where you have to start this ball here.
That's incredible, Trev.
This is pretty cool imagination here, Ian. This is looking good.
Oh, what a putt there from Mackenzie Hughes.
Wow.
And he moves to 16 under now.
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
James Cebulski, Mike English in for Perry Solkowski, who's off on holidays this week. Mackenzie Hughes, bit of a weekend there, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, he was a first-round leader at the Travelers on Thursday, came close to shooting a 59, ended up with a 60, and then just the way he ended it yesterday with those long monster putts on 17 and 18 to finish in a tie for third. And, Hughes having a great year. He finished second at the Honda Classic, just before we took the break for the COVID episode. So I had a second place finish at the Honda Classic. The tie for third yesterday is about 1.2 million on the PGA leaderboard. And I only bring up the money thing simply because, well, everybody loves money. But the second thing is, don't forget, the Olympics are coming up. They began and postponed due to COVID, but all these guys are trying to make the Canadian Olympic golf team. And right now, Mackenzie Hughes has put himself into that equation. So Nick Taylor, by the way, leads all Canadian golfers with about $1.8 million right now. But I'll tell you what, you got to be impressed with our Canadian contingent on tour right now. They're all over $1 million this early in the season. Corey Connors, Hadwin, Taylor, Mackenzie Hughes. I don't profess to be a huge golf guy, but it's great to see the guys doing well out on tour.
Yeah, good on him. You know, finishes with a $437,000 payday. Dustin Johnson claims the Travelers Championship over the weekend, finishing in 19 under, two shots ahead of Mackenzie Hughes, and finishes tied for third at 17 under. What a putt. I mean, the one putt yesterday where he totally bends it like Beckham, and fantastic shot. But yeah, you know, as they play on and more cases continue to pop up, Mackenzie Hughes has stayed healthy and getting paid. So that's an encouraging sign. So speaking of trying to stay healthy, how about the story over the weekend and the report coming down from Sportsnet baseball insider Shai Davidi last night, as he reported that Blue Jays players have been told to prepare to travel north of the border to Toronto. So that's according to Sportsnet's Shai Davidi. Now, there's been no official announcement from the team at this point, but a charter flight is apparently scheduled to leave Dunedin, Florida on Wednesday, according to Davidi. The Jays have yet to officially reveal where they're going to hold their training camp ahead of the shortened MLB season. And here's the funny thing, Mike. Like, they're supposed to kick things off on Wednesday. Camps are supposed to start on Canada Day, and the Jays have yet to kind of get any sort of clarity as to what they're going to do. Not that people are going to go to the ballpark and go watch them. But, you know, it was funny because on Friday, Blue Jays president and CEO Mark Shapiro was on the Tim and Sid show, and he basically said that nothing was finalized yet. But take a listen to what Mark Shapiro had to say in conversation going into the weekend. This is like right before the NHL draft lottery, but here's Mark Shapiro, the Jays CEO.
While we've been in contact, you know, for 8 weeks, we really only were able to make a formal ask in the past week once there was a deal done with the union. So, and initially that was focused on playing our regular season games. We think it's extremely important, even without fans in the stadium, to play on Canadian soil. You know, the optics of playing, being the only major league team not playing in their stadium and playing in another state and country is not one that we want. So that was where our efforts were focused.
So there's Mark Shapiro suggesting that. So the one thing that reported by Hazel May over the weekend, that if the Jays do get final approval to head north, players and staff will stay at the hotel that's attached to the ballpark. The old Sky Dome, or now Rogers Center. So they're required to quarantine, but they can go to the field and go back to their room. So there's direct access from the hotel right to the ballpark. It's essentially attached. But I'll tell you what, the optics on this would be just terrible in a lot of ways, right? I mean, importing a charter flight of individuals from a region that is simply exploding. They had almost 47,000 cases in Florida in the week, last week alone. I mean, almost 9,000 in one day. But I understand the situation that the Jays are in, because they don't want to be the only nomads in Major League Baseball. But man, like, is the Justin Trudeau government and the Ontario provincial government, I mean, man, they're gonna have some tough questions, because you know, a whole bunch of people in the organization that tested positive just in the last week as well.
Yeah, I don't understand it myself. I mean, I'll give Bonnie Henry and her bunch due here, putting the stop sign up to the NHL, and I'm somewhat surprised they're letting them in the country, to be perfectly honest. I mean, maybe Ontario is relaxing the rules a little bit more than we are out here, but somewhat surprised that they're going to let them do this.
Yeah,
not only that the Jays are here, but if they do play their games, then all of a sudden you've got all these other teams coming into Toronto, which is another issue.
Well, and that's where I'm kind of wondering how is this, I think if you've done it for the National Hockey League and the position that we are in from a Canadian standpoint, we're in much better shape. But the optics of saying, okay, here comes a charter flight from a team, from a group of employees that have been, exposed, a lot of people who've tested positive, and you're going to bring them all up. You can put them in a bubble. Again, this is the other thing. And I said this last week, and I want to get into this in the 7 o'clock, Mike. Somebody's going to compromise a bubble. There's going to be an athlete, whether it's a National Hockey League player, whether it's an NBA player, whether it's a Major League Baseball player. You cannot convince me that a single 20-something-year-old single athlete is going to go out and try to get their swerve on or try to go and have some fun. You're expecting somebody to buckle up and behave for 3 months? There is a human nature element that we are, we are forgetting about, or at least maybe not we're forgetting about, but executive officials for leagues that are overlooking. And I think it's going to be an issue.
Just don't go to Brandy's. That's all I'm saying.
Well, look at that. I mean, there was a story in the province the beginning of the week last week about, hey, look at the safety precautions that some of these strip clubs have done. They put a big plexiglass, and then within a couple of days, all of a sudden, there's been an outbreak apparently at Brandy's. Unbelievable. We'll get into this in the 6 o'clock hour. James, Mike, Corey Hirsch, Sportsnet 650 Canucks analyst, joins us next here on Sportsnet 650.
Let's get it going. It's time to get up.
The number one overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to a team yet to be determined, coming from the qualifying round in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
These guys are here to break it all down.
Black lives matter. We should be saying it every day. It's not political. This is not a political statement. It's a human rights statement.
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
7:01, it's going to feel like summer today. Yesterday finally felt like summer as well after kind of a gloomy weekend. We're going to have nice warm temperatures today. 23 with the humidex, going to feel closer like 26 with sunny skies in the forecast. I mean, why not, right? I mean, hey, Canucks fans, you got a 12.5% chance of getting the first overall pick, right? all you need is your Minnesota Wild to do what they did in 2003 and spank those Canucks and get them out of the playoffs as quick as possible there. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, you'll feel so good when that happens. Looking forward to it. You know what? I will commend the people voting on our poll. They're not going that direction, although 35% of you are. But 65 say, you know what, let's win the series and not worry about the draft pick. By the way, did you see Elliot Friedman Friday during the post-lottery segment after the lottery had taken place? It looked like he had just emerged from a Turkish prison with that beard, and he's going to need a chainsaw to take it off. He said he's taking a couple of weeks off. He's going to need a week of that just to get the beard off.
Yeah,
but, it's amazing. It was a crazy time post-lottery. I mean, when all that happened, the placeholder won the lottery, and I know Ron McLean was fronting the program in conversation with Elliot and Sam Cosentino. Lafreniere was supposed to join them. Lafreniere saw what happened, said, hey, you know what? I'm not going on the air to talk about this. Forget it. Bill Daly, same thing. He says, ain't going anywhere near a television set after this. So these guys are scrambling just to put a program together, and it was fun to watch. They did a great job, given all that was happening. And it was great television. I know the Ottawa Senators weren't happy about it, but it was a great 1 hour of television, the lottery and the post-show afterward.
Well, it's the damage control. James Cebulski, by the way. Mike English in for Perry Sulkowski, who's off of the week. Just to see that, I go back to a story that happened in the Canadian Football League about 15 years ago, where they went to announce the award winners, and what they do is they put all the media members in a lockup. So they kind of give you the winners, and you can kind of write your story accordingly, but you cannot go with the results until, and you agree, you sign a waiver, and then you ultimately You can kind of work on your story and start filling in the blanks, and then you get your quotes once the players, you know, you can go public with it once it's announced at these award ceremonies, and, you know, they slowly bring the players back, and you can talk to them, and you can get a couple of sound bites to go in with their reaction to winning these awards. Well, they had a fan choice award that Anthony Calvillo and Danny McManus had tied for the one particular seat. But the real interesting story was the fact that Anthony Calvillo had lost the Most Outstanding Player Award to Casey Pritters that year. And so what they had done was they had brought, you know, Anthony Calvillo to the back to talk to the media before before the MOP award was announced. And so he's just asked about the fans' choice. But the first question he's asked for is a writer who says, oh, how'd you feel about losing the MVP award? And Anthony has no idea yet. He's like, what? And what? And so he's like, really? Seriously? And then suddenly, you know, the PR staff of the CFL quickly realized, we'll bring Anthony back later. And he was just, what the hell's the point of this? And, you know, he's kind of all pissed off and he's walking off. And you get the same sense that Lafreniere and Daly are in the same sort of thing. Like, holy crap, this is awful. This is not what we need. I'm not talking right now. I'm not putting myself in this position. I don't care how many millions and millions of dollars. I don't care if they're giving us $500 million, Sportsnet. You guys figure it out yourself, because I'm not embarrassing myself in this position. So the National Hockey League, figuring it all out and left us to talk a lot of hockey scenarios going forward. Let's get in Sportsnet hockey analyst Corey Hirsch here, who was on the line here bright and early on this Monday morning. Hirschy, how are you, sir?
I'm good. What's up, kids?
Oh, where to begin? I mean, just kind of diving in. You got Canucks fans pulling for the Wild all of a sudden for a 12.5% chance at getting the Lafreniere lottery sweepstakes. What was your takeaway of all this?
Well, I thought they did a good job of putting it all together and creating some suspense and drama, right? And creating some interest in hockey again. But let's be honest, they had a lot of time to think about it. They had a lot of time. It better be good, right? But, you know, it's still 12.5%. I mean, it'd be nice to get him. Holy crap, would that be unbelievable? That would change, you know, that would, like, completely change the franchise. They're doing pretty well right now. But could you imagine? That kid is good. That kid is he's a game changer for sure.
Well, you knew something was up when Daly walked out with 8 cards and there were only 7 teams out of the playoffs. So right away, you knew you were going to phase 2 even before you said a word. The Ottawa situation, tough one for them, tough one for Detroit. LA comes out a winner, and obviously one of the 8 postseason teams that will lose in the playoff round comes out a winner. Did you like the format? Would you do it all over again and change it up?
I did. I liked the format. I thought it was, like I said, it created some much needed suspense and drama. And now, you know, these playoffs are, now there's something to watch, right? Even for sure. It's not like, even in the first round, even in the knockout round, there's something to watch. So I like how they did it. I mean, hey, that's the way it is. It's better than years ago. Remember when I believe they had the lockout and Pittsburgh got back-to-back first round picks? Like, come on. Right. Do you remember that?
Right.
They set up a franchise. Like, I mean, how brutal was that? So at least this is fair. I like the drama and suspense. It's good. Now, you know what? I'm sorry, Ottawa and Detroit. I'm sorry about your luck, but guess what? Put together a better team, right? Be better.
Well,
on
that's
ice.
Exactly what I said. You know what?
Yeah.
Sometimes you aren't rewarded with a top overall pick for being a disaster on the ice.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Wait a second here, because I think we went through this and watched what happened with the Canucks, and you know, you think ownership, you think management, you think any fan, like, here's the thing. I mean, the idea of tanking, do you think anybody really wants to sell that for an extended period? Like, look how that impacted the Canucks organization and the franchise. I mean, the franchise value has dropped. You know, you all of a sudden had empty seats in the building for the first time after, what, a glorious near 20-year run for this franchise. And just how toxic and turned off the fan base was. You know, the Canucks became borderline apathetic for a little while here in this market, which was crazy to think, considering that the runs and how everybody was all in 9 years ago with this 2011 Cup run. You know,
yeah,
the Canucks needed luck, too. And they had absolute you know, horse manure luck when it came to the lottery year after year. Now it's worked out with picks like Hughes and Pedersen, but I mean, guys, I mean, I think if anybody can empathize what Detroit just went through and what the Senators went through, I think it would be Canuck fan, wouldn't it?
Well, here's the one side that I look at, though, C-ball. I talk with Jim Benning, you know, I mean, I see him all the time. And they at least tried to put a somewhat competitive team on the ice. Like, they were bad, and they were tanking. But they, you know, they kept the Sedins, and they still tried, and they kept Tanev, and they kept, you know, like Edler, and they could have just let, like, they could have completely dropped out. Detroit and Ottawa, like, they tried as hard as they could to tank. Like, Detroit, how many points did Detroit have? They were terrible. And I think, you know, there's a small difference between what the Canucks and Detroit and Ottawa did. The Canucks at least tried to ice a team that could at least somewhat be competitive on the ice.
Well, they spent to the cap, whether people like that idea or not, but they did, yeah.
Well, I mean, Louis helped it get there, but and that might be considered tanking in itself. But sorry, Louis, I still love you.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
You know, but it's like, but yeah. So that's what I see. You know, and they didn't get rewarded. Sorry, but I don't feel bad at all, especially after what Canucks fans have been through with the draft lottery.
It's not as though they're not getting anything. I mean, you're getting a 3 and a 5, so things aren't all that bad. They'll get two good players out of that.
Yeah, and that, you know, you've got to make sure that those are good players. If you look at the drafts, if you go back to the drafts, I mean, Quinn Hughes probably goes even higher now, and so does Pedersen, right? Pedersen might even go first overall if you went back, but that's not those teams fault in front of them. I mean, the draft happens the way it happens. You can't tell what a I'll tell you what, go look at a 17-year-old and tell me what he's going to be in 3 years from now. You know, and you're like, even away from hockey and in any form of life, and you'll be like, huh, completely different, right? You don't know. It's tough to, those kids are tough to judge.
And where's the mindset at and all of it? Corey Hirsch with us here on Sportsnet 650. Well, my only issue with the draft lottery, hey, I don't mind the ping pong balls trying to pick something. But I don't think you need to make it as inclusive as it is. Do you know what I mean, Hershey? Like, I don't think, you know, these play, like the placeholder team. Did one of those teams really need to be into that mix? I think if you were getting a chance to legitimately compete for a Stanley Cup, which all these teams are, right? You're going into a best of five series, and if you advance to that, now here we go, game on. You got a best of now here you go. The chase is on. But you're still given a lifeline to go and compete, right?
Yeah.
Like teams like the Wild, like the Canucks. I mean, that's a winnable series for either team. Oilers, Hawks, that's a winnable series for either team. And you can look at that for most scenarios. I mean, even Montreal, for that matter, right? I mean, do they need to be in a position to garner the first overall pick? I would say no. Teams like Detroit. Like there, and in fairness to Detroit, as bad as Detroit was this year, Detroit had been probably for the last 30 years, or at least the last quarter century anyway, a model, if not the model franchise in the National Hockey League, right?
Right.
That's where I say, you know what? Hey, look, there are teams that are bad. Like, look, the Senators, I mean, scorched earth for the last little bit, but, you know, look at the teams. Like, there's five teams you can legitimately look at and say, you know what, you're a bad team. One of those five teams should legitimately get it. I don't think a team that finishes 10th in the league or the 10th worst, do they need to be in contention for the first overall pick? No. Maybe you can modify it to they can be a top three, but they don't need to be number one.
If you're Buffalo, you're pissed. Right?
Sure.
Yeah, you know what, it's there's never going to be a perfect way to do it. There just isn't. There's no way to make anything 1,000% fair, right? I mean, it's not going to happen. At least it's better than the old system, you know, where you got rewarded for you know, losing games on purpose. I don't disagree, but I guess we'll wait and see. Now, I was going to ask you guys, is it guaranteed, though? Like, so if a hub city, so Edmonton gets hub city, right? Edmonton can't play in Edmonton. Is that finalized?
I think they can play there.
Okay, because that would change all the matchups. Like, if Edmonton couldn't play, you know, does that mean Edmonton and Chicago go over to some other city, or does Edmonton and the other team swap from the East, right? I mean, if that's the, I remember them talking about that. I haven't heard anything since if that's going to be the case.
There were some rumors and some rumblings out there this morning suggesting that we could get a sense of what the hub cities could be announced as early as today. So
yeah.
Obviously there's a lot of issues that, I mean, the whole CBA, it needs to be addressed right now and what that looks like. And there's a story that's kind of been on the back burner because of what we're talking about with the draft lottery and how that kind of played out on Friday night. But man, like what the sort of the details that Elliot Friedman reported the other day with what they're voting on for an updated CBA, man, like 4 years added to the two remaining seasons, the cap staying at 81.5 for the next couple of years, and then it'll climb up by $1 million. Man, there's going to be some teams up against it. I mean, how does it? You're gonna see some very good players hit the market, and they may not even be able to get paid because so many other teams are going to be up against it.
Well, yeah, it's gonna be nuts. You're gonna see five guys making $10 million. And you're gonna see everybody else making the league minimum, right? I mean, it's gonna be
the middle class, right?
It's
it's gonna be a societal effect.
It'd be like Toronto. Everyone's gonna be like Toronto.
Yes. You know?
But, you know, I am hearing, and I've heard from a very, very good source, that Vegas is a lock. So, and I don't think that's a big secret, you know, but.
736 new cases announced yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Well, at least it's not 9,000, though.
If you can quarantine, so if I'm the league, I probably have the hotel and everything in motion right now. You're going to put a giant flipping fence around a resort, and away you go, right? On the bus, you know.
Well, I want to play something for you guys here because this is a perfect time to get into this because I think we've all kind of looked at Vegas being one scenario, and if you want to connect the dots based on what it's been suggested, it sounds like Toronto is going to be the other hub city, and maybe you've got a west, and I think the fact that the Canadian the federal government's been willing to relax or at least modify what sort of quarantine rules and allow this to happen. They were going to allow it to happen for Vancouver before, you know, BC health officials ultimately said, you know what, we're not going with that plan, and so things fell apart last week. But Jalen Rose was part of a discussion on an NBA panel over the weekend on ESPN, talking to Paul Pierce and Adrian Wojnarowski. And I want to play this for you. Greg Ballack back in the studio. Greg, can you queue up this clip with Jalen Rose and basically suggesting that somebody, and he's talking from an NBA standpoint, but I think this relates to the NHL as well, to even Major League Baseball, and they're sort of, well, I mean, they're just doing team bubbles. But how this is going to pertain. But listen to what Jalen Rose says. I guarantee this is going to probably happen with one of these players. Have a listen to Jalen Rose here from the weekend.
The OGs, the vets, the married guys with kids, they're going to be great. The problem is going to be the young guys who are trying to sneak in people to say that they're their manicurist and their pedicurist and their barber for extracurricular fun and activities.
Why?
These are young, athletic, intelligent, handsome
You're giving
men
them the cheat
that
code.
Are millionaires. Woj, I'm already following you. I know eventually we're going to see some.
We're going to have all the amenities there, though, Jay. Come on, there's going to be a barber in a bubble. There's going to be massage therapists. There's going to be food. They're going to have the amenities.
Paul Pierce, you was once a young player in the league.
I think you're missing
the
point.
There's a lot more fun that happens off the court than happens on the court. That's probably why I ain't win a championship.
Oh, without
I had so much fun away from the court. So much fun.
So there's Jalen Rose. Like, honestly, and this is something I said last week, like, this is not something that we have really discussed. We are all just assuming everybody is going to be on their best behavior. But guess what? Not everybody is. And we talk so much about, there's been so much about, you know, I don't know if some of these players, they've got families. I don't know if they're going to want to be, you know, sequestered for 2-3 months, quarantined and bubbled up, you know. But what we're not talking about is an overwhelming number of the 700 players in the National Hockey League that are young, single dudes that want to go and get some action or go out
That's
and play
funny.
And have some fun or misbehave.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure where you want me to go with this. Go in a multitude of directions.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say this. I think it's great. I think everybody's saying the right thing, but I do think somebody is going to ultimately compromise one of these bubbles. It's just going to happen. There's a human nature. There's a human element that I don't think everybody is factoring in and considering, that you're going to have everybody, you know, locked up for up to 3 months in some areas.
Yeah, but C-ball, it's, you know, some teams are going to be locked up for 2 weeks, right?
Like, yep.
Like, everybody thinks they're going to be going the distance. There's only two teams that are going to go the distance. You know, but let's be honest, like, most teams will be, they'll play their five-game series, and then they'll be knocked out in the first round, right? So you're going to eliminate, you know, you're going to get down to eight teams within 3 to 4 weeks. So then it becomes different. And let's put it this way. If you can't control yourself, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks, well, then you know what? You should probably look into getting some therapy.
but Hershey, guys, dude, you played in the National Hockey League. I'm sure you saw it at times. There were guys that still, you know, I used this example the other day, but I remember covering, you know, going back 13 years ago during the 2007 Stanley Cup final between the Ducks and the Senators. And I remember the hotel that we were staying at. There were a few Senators, because guys who had been called up late in the year or guys who had been late season acquisitions, they were staying in the same hotel as well. And I remember my camera guy, who was where he was loading up his gear early the one morning after a game, and there were guys that were coming back to the hotel at 6 o'clock in the morning and trying to hide women behind a car. Like, this was just one of those things. And that's in the middle of the Stanley Cup, that you say, man, it's just a short window. This is what you wait for your entire life to play. Just behave for 10 or 2 weeks or whatever. And all of a sudden, guys are still going out. Guys are still going to have fun. So if that's the Stanley Cup final in a 2 week bubble, what's a 3 month bubble or say a 6 week bubble look like?
Well, let's hope it doesn't go back to like wartime where they're bussing in girls.
Honestly, funny you say that, but I mean, is there not something to think about? Like, are you basically getting the players to sign off on abstinence for 2 months if you're a single player? Right? I think it's a good point you make. And it's not I'm not trying to be a goofball here. I just think that there are some things that you're going, okay, you're going to have everybody bubble up, and it's like, really?
I'm sure they will have, I don't know if they'll have those kind of outlets, but I'm sure they'll have some form of, you know, nightly entertainment. It'll be like the Olympics, you know, where they bring, you know, you just, probably a 24-hour cafeteria type setting. There's going to be players from every, you know, team there. You'll have lots of people to hang out. My guess is they'll probably still have gambling. You know, they'll have stuff. You know, movie theaters, everything for guys to. You'll be locked in, but it'll be like its own little city. I'm pretty sure that's what they're going to have to do. You can't just lock them in their rooms, but everybody in and everybody out has to be credentialed and tested. That's just the way it's going to be. Like, they're not going to let guys off the resort. I don't see, because you can't. Right. I mean, look at, like, Texas had, I think, 4,200 cases, right, yesterday or something like that. That's going to happen in all, like, these states, they're all doubling right now. So it's, you know, Vegas isn't going to be any different. And they're going to have to think about that.
Let me ask you this, Corey. If you were an NHL player today, are you voting for this? Are you going? Are you saying, yeah, I'm going?
You know what, Mike? I'm a Canadian boy, and I would give my left arm for a chance at the Stanley Cup. So that's how I was brought up and raised. That's what I watched when I was a kid. So, yes, I would 100% be going. I don't know, you know, what other guys' countries, and, you know, maybe it's different for every country, but that's how I was born and raised as a Canadian. I do not have my name etched on the Stanley Cup. And I would give you, like I said, my left arm if I could. It'd be tough to play without a left arm, though. I wouldn't have a glove hand. But I'd still do it.
Great. A one-armed goalie. Thanks, Kurt Horsch.
I think most guys have the same mentality. I really do. You know, being young and fit as they are, you know, if they do get sick, odds are they'll probably, you know, there's a very good chance they're going to get through it, of course. And if the health authorities aren't worried about these guys getting sick in the terms of recovery, then it's not a problem. The issue is them getting sick and then being around elderly or people that, you know, are struggling or whatever. That's where, you know, we've come to learn that we have to protect those types of people.
Thanks for getting up bright and early with us this morning. Nice summer day out there, so enjoy it. Continue to be safe. And
I will. But we'll before I go, I'll ask you, C-Ball, and I'll ask you this, Mike. What would you do to have your name etched on the Stanley Cup?
What would I do? I think it'd be fun to hoist it at a party. To have my name etched on the Stanley Cup. Yeah, I don't think I would. I don't know. I'd probably have my limits. maybe jump off a cliff into some deep water, fairly high cliff, maybe. I don't know. Maybe run naked down the street. I don't know. Nobody wants to see this dad bod, but I don't know. Maybe
I got to put myself out there a bit.
Going
down to the quad.
We're going maybe streaking.
I was raised this.
I don't know. Shotgun a few. I don't know. Yeah, do something.
I'll play.
Get me under the influence and ask me that question, Hershey.
Will you eat this pound of butter to get your name etched on the Stanley Cup? Yes, I will.
Yes. Can you give me a couple crackers to go with it?
That's fantastic. I love it.
I got a 12-year-old who would eat two sticks of butter for that matter. So a butter addiction in this house. Take care, buddy. Happy Canada Day as well.
Thanks, guys. Canada Day is my birthday.
Nice.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah. All right, guys. Talk soon.
That's the most Canadian thing we'll hear all week, my friend. Take care, Hershey. Happy birthday, buddy.
Steve Boss.
There he is, Corey Hirsch, Sportsnet 650 Canucks analyst, weighing in on the draft lottery and where things go from there. We'll continue to keep the conversation going. James Cebulski, Mike English with you. Also, you know what, as we mentioned, some of the explosions of cases in certain states happening in the U.S., baseball is set to return, and not just Major League Baseball. And one league is putting fans in the stands. And I ask you this to think about. We'll get into this in a moment. Would you go to a sporting event right now if you had the opportunity? Yes or no? Would you go? We'll get into it and we'll explain the parameters next right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Feel it in my bones, it's down to the wire.
Here you go, Pierre. You'll love this one. If you could trade 3 and 5 for one, would you?
No comment.
It's Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick in conversation with Ottawa Senators General Manager Pierre Dorion. Now, there you go. There's a conversation I would have from a Canucks standpoint. If in the event the Canucks were somehow to land the first overall pick, if they flamed out against the Wild, then I would be saying, okay, let's make a quick call over to Pierre Dorion and say, all right, what do you got? What are you giving me for that top overall selection? I want 3 and 5 to start. Maybe you take Louis Erickson. Maybe you throw in another blue chip prospect, whatever the case. But now you're talking. James Cebulski, Mike English in for Perry Solkowski on this Monday morning. That's our Sportsnet 650 poll question this morning, Mike. What would you rather see happen for the Canucks? Beat the Wild in the play-in round, or would you rather take that chance at the number one overall pick, where the Canucks would have a 12.5% chance if they fell to the Wild? Right now, it seems like sanity is ruling the day, at least this point. 65% of you say, beat the Wild.
Would you really consider trading Lafreniere if you got him?
Yes.
Really?
If depending on the team, depending on the situation I was in. If I'm the Vancouver Canucks, if we want to just use that from a local example, I would definitely consider taking moving Lafreniere. I think if you can get the third and the fifth overall pick, and I think there's a sense that a third overall pick that where you're going to get what is deemed to be a pretty good draft, you might be able to get an impact player. Man, you might be able to land, and whether you want to go that high, you might be able to get the best goaltending prospect to come along in years. As well. I mean, there is some talent that is to be had. I would consider moving Lafreniere. My only issue with Lafreniere, as good as he is, he's on the wing. And everybody says he is an absolute stud. He is a point-scoring machine. But I would wonder, depending on what I could get for my team, yeah, I would move it. I would consider moving it.
Yeah, interesting. I don't think I would actually. I mean, obviously you'd have to open up and see what's out there. And yeah, and I guess if the right deal came along, you do make that deal. But supposedly, and we hear this all the time, he's a generational player. Well, we'll see. But they're few and far between. Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews.
Player? Like every year's a talk of a generational player.
I know.
We asked the question about Jack Hughes, is he a generational player? Rasmus Dahlin, generational player. Exactly. Connor McDavid's a generational player. Austin Matthews.
Lowering the bar.
Like of all the of all these players that have come through in the last 10 years or since Sidney Crosby, and all due respect, and you know what? John Tavares is a great player, man. And Steven Stamkos has been a fantastic player. And Nathan MacKinnon is an absolute beast. But there is one generational player in the last 15 years post-Sidney Crosby, and that's Connor McDavid. And I think we could all agree on that. You know, 100% you can't just sit there and, you know, a generational player is a generational player. It's one guy. It's a unicorn that comes by once in a, you know, in a sort of lifetime or once every 15 years. You know, Gretzky, Lemieux, you know, Lindros, you know, Crosby. You know, like it's... It's not just every other year. Oh, generational player. No, shut the front door. Like, take the whole generational out for a minute and forget it. Nevertheless, 65% of people say they'd take a win over the Wild. The first playoff appearance for the Canucks in 5 years, and people are looking at playoffs. So I want to throw this at you here, Mike. So a story. Now, Texas may not be Florida right now, but it's still one of the red flag hotspots for coronavirus in the United States. And, you know, over the last few days, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, announced that Texas bars were going to be closing, river rafting also banned as well. But baseball's moving ahead, right? We know that Major League Baseball, and in fact, a lot of stories over the last 24 hours that the Jays might be able to use Rogers Center, the old Sky Dome, as their potential hub for them as they play on, and just kind of business as usual for Major League Baseball. But there's another season that is slated to begin coming up on July 3rd, next weekend. And it's opening day for the Sugar Land Skeeters. So this is a team that usually plays in the Independent Atlantic League. But this year, they're going to play nothing but home games. So they're going to have a four-team league at their park outside of Houston, and they're going to play 56 games. And they got some star power here, okay? So Roger Clemens is going to join his son, Kobe, in managing one of the teams. You've got the regular Sugar Land Skeeters manager, Pete Incaviglia. Remember Pete?
Big Pete? Big slugger, yeah. Texas Rangers.
Big bopper, exactly. So Pete Incaviglia and 17-year Major League veteran Greg Swindell. Man, I remember that name from RBI Baseball as a kid. They take charge of two of the other teams. They're going to announce the final skipper on the weekend. And they're going to do this with fans in the stands. So the plan is to operate at a 25% capacity, which in that ballpark works out to just under 2,000 fans in the stands. I know it's easy to sit there and kick around a Texas league or otherwise, but the one thing our provincial health officials they preach consistently is stay outside. If you're getting together, stay outside. So if you can space it out in an outdoor setting, you know, I've been pretty mindful. We've been, as a family, been pretty mindful of our bubble. You know, we've gotten together with people, but we've always done it outside. We've gone to the beach, or we've, you know, just kind of stayed in the backyard. Mike, I think you guys have been pretty tight in your bubble as well. But I don't know if this is, I don't think this is that bad an idea. When I go by the beach in our neck of the woods, you know, I see people gathered, you know, we see images of beaches, people packing beaches, but you know, then you look at the overhead and people are kind of spaced out in their own little bubbles. I think it's doable. I would put it this way. I would do it in an outdoor setting. I don't think I would do it in an indoor setting. How about you?
Well, you know what? As you know, I'm a longtime Skeeter fan. So that being said, I would definitely go. You know what? I think if there's only 2,000 fans in a stadium, you're able to spread yourself out enough to keep your 2 meters, 6 feet apart from other groups. And I don't think it's an issue at all. I mean, I know they had done a look at BC Play Stadium as well, if they wanted to bring fans in, the Whitecaps games or Lions games, and they had looked at how they could space the fans off. And I believe there's a company out there that's already doing it from a computer point of view, how they can get fans into certain buildings and spread them out to follow all the health regulations. So I'm all for it. Like I'd go. Just, again, you just got to be keep your distance and handle yourself well and stay within the health regulations.
Yeah, no, I think if you could do it where you knew you were going to have enough space away from the next group of fans, you know, a Vancouver Canadiens game, you know, use that as an example. 650-650, would you right now, at a 25% capacity, would you go to a game right now, a sporting event? 650-650. I'd be curious on this. A few people already jumping in. Bleep, yeah, I would. I would give me left arm to go to an NHL game right now is what one individual says. 100% I would go, says another. So there are people already. And it's funny because I had this conversation with a couple of friends from back east. And they live in Toronto. And we were catching up on a Zoom call about a week and a half ago. And Mike, it was interesting. These guys are all pretty, you know, pretty successful, very intelligent individuals, and they all were overwhelmingly of the opinion. I said, "Would you go to a concert right now, in a venue with like 2,000 people? Would you go to something?" And without hesitation, they were like, "Absolutely, no question." They had absolutely zero concern or fear in their mind about, you know, going down and doing it. And it was. I think I would be inclined I'll put it this way, in an environment for the Vancouver Canadiens at a 25% capacity in an outdoor environment that you knew that it was going to be spaced out, I'd be willing to go to a Canadiens game. For a Canucks game inside, for an NBA game inside, I think I'd be less willing to do it. Now, you've got the big high ceiling, so you've got a little more space in terms of that. But to me, I would sooner do an outdoor ballpark. You know, BC Place is an interesting one. I think you got the high ceiling. So I'd probably consider doing that for a Whitecaps or a Lions game with that sort of spacing at 25%. I don't think I would do the inside.
100% agreement. I wouldn't do the inside thing, but outside, yeah. I mean, it's no different than going to the beach that's crowded and you're still in your own little bubble, family bubble, or whoever you're with.
Yeah.
You've spaced yourself off the way you should, and you can do the same thing in a stadium.
Yeah. And
I'm all for it.
Yeah, no, and just kind of see where it would ultimately go. So just judging by some of the reactions, 650-650 is our text line. Love to hear from you if you would be of opinion to willing to go, or would you still keep your bubble as tight as possible at this point in time? But some of the early reaction, some individuals suggesting that. Kevin in Port Moody also texting in at 650-650. What about Ovechkin when talking about generational players? Yeah, I would go there. But let me ask you this, Mike, because you would have remembered this around this time. Ovechkin was the clear consensus number one overall pick that year, and he was all the talk. But was he painted as a... I don't think he was necessarily given the generational talent in those days. Right? Maybe it was the North American or the Canadian bias on that one. But Ovechkin had the hype. I just don't know if he necessarily had the generational talent at that point.
Yeah, not at that point. Certainly now he has, obviously. Yeah, but totally. At that point, no. Because it was always Crosby and Ovechkin, right? And then Malkin came into the picture. But yeah, I remember when he first came in and his mom was his agent at that point. And let's face it, in those days, he was basically a mystery for most people in North America.
Yeah.
But obviously has developed into being one of the, maybe the best goal scorer in the history of the league.
Richard texting in all the way from Prince George. Richard at PG says, I would probably go as long as they allow outside food and drinks so you're not standing in line for a beer. Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, I get
social
that.
Distance.
Totally.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, in terms of you make it make it so you're not cramming it. Like, it's funny. There was, some of the malls have opened up, and you got people that go into malls, but then, you limit, or you've got your, they're only limiting so many people in a store, but then everybody's crammed in a lineup next to each other to try to get into these stores. So, stores are practicing social distancing until, you can't get into the store, and then everybody's kind of huddled up in a line, arm to arm to arm. 7:43, Evander Kane will join us just after 8 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation. Also, the New England Patriots making some big news over the last 24 hours as well. Cam Newton's a Pat. How does that impact the Patriots? Dolphins fans, are you scared? Bills fans, would there even be a Bills fan out here on this side of the world? Does that make you nervous? We'll get into that next right here on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
All right, 7:48. And James Cebulski, Mike English hanging out with you until 9 this morning here on Sportsnet 650. Beautiful sunny day out there, up to 26 with the Humidex today. Finally feeling like summer here in Metro Vancouver. So, Mike, I love the timing of this yesterday as the New England Patriots announced the signing of Cam Newton to a one-year deal. But the best thing about it is just how, this completely takes away from the news that comes down also yesterday that the Patriots were fined $1.1 million and also were stripped of a third-round pick in next year's draft by the NFL following that investigation for, I guess we can call it Spygate 2, where they had an employee filming the Bengals sideline during the 2019 season. He was there for a Do Your Job video series and then just happened to just keep the camera exclusively on the Bengals sideline. So, they were supposed to be doing this piece on the
advanced. They came down a little harder than I expected they would for that. But, it's a strategy political parties use all the time, James. I mean, just get the bad news off the front page. Let's give them some good news. And some announcement comes out. And that's what Bill Belichick and the Patriots did yesterday. And bringing Cam Newton aboard and blowing off the bad news off the front page.
Yeah. Now, so Newton is coming off foot surgery from back in the winter. And, he's a three-time Pro Bowler. He only played the two games last year. Cam's kind of gone off a cliff, it feels like, kind of the last year and a bit. But I think a lot of people are kind of looking at this saying, this is a smart play for the Patriots. It's a smart play for Cam. If these two can kind of, rehab themselves each respectively, he won't be able to do it alone, but he's going into an environment that is, the ultimate winning environment and the guy who will essentially replace, Tom Brady. So Cam's going to bet on himself on this one-year deal. He's 31, so I mean, if you think about it, he's already, he's 12 years younger than Tom Brady right out of the gate. So you've gotten younger, but you're bringing in a guy who's got experience being an MVP quarterback, a guy who's been to a Super Bowl, came up short, but been to a Super Bowl no less, and a three, if Cam Newton can get back to even 80% of what apex Cam Newton is, the Patriots can win this division still in the AFC East. I want to see if Josh Allen can take that next step with Buffalo, because that's a team that seems to be ready to make that jump. But you got to, their quarterback, Josh Allen, he's got to do it, right? I mean, at some point he's got the weapons, he's got the firepower, he's got a great defensive unit to work with as well. But here you go. The Patriots are not going away just yet. And I think if you're a Dolphins fan and kind of looking at the way the team's kind of finally trending in the right direction, that's probably a little bit of a, Cam, I don't know if I like that. Would have preferred Brian Hoyer, the quarterback there. So, they're not going away just yet. They're not a Super Bowl contender in any stretch. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't rule them out of the AFC and claiming that division all of a sudden out of the AFC East.
No, I mean, I don't have 100% faith in Buffalo either. They're owned by the Pagulas, who seem to have their own problems with the Buffalo Sabres, and God knows if that spreads over to the Buffalo Bills. But here's my question for you. You got Tom Brady in Tampa, and now you've got the new quarterback in New England. Which one is going to have the better year, statistically, individually?
You know, I often felt last year that as much as the mobility has eroded more and more, I'll still lean towards Brady on this one just because the weapons that he's got to utilize now in Tampa, to be able to have an opportunity to go and try to execute with that offense, I feel like Tom is kind of set up more for success right now than where Cam is in New England, because I'm not sold on what sort of weapons Cam has in New England right now comparatively to what Tom Brady's inheriting by landing with the Bucks. So if I had to bet on one right now, I'd still bet on TB12. And as much as people talked about Tom going off a cliff last year, you know, the one thing that Newton will bring to New England is the mobility element. And you know, that's a big question mark too, right? Guy coming off foot surgery. You know, as much as but if he's healthy and he can get back to being, you know, looking anything like Cam Newton of the past, trim down a little bit, you know, come in 20 pounds lighter there, Cam, and let's see if you can get some of that mobility again and get back to being that guy who was, I mean, that guy was essentially a video game player for a while, right? I mean, you think of the pop culture element that he impacted. Man, he was kind of the OG of the dab, right? Remember when kids all of a sudden doing the dab here, there, and everywhere? That was Cam Newton. But if I had to pick one for ready-made success in 2020, I'll look to Tom Brady based on what he's got to work with in Tampa. And I think with Bruce Arians there to work with them, I know it'll be an adjustment period for both, but I think there's an opportunity for success there more so than Cam in year one in Boston. And you know what? Here's the other thing. How does Cam Newton play in cold weather when it gets when you start getting into some of those fall months in Boston, right? When you start getting to November and getting into the December months. You know, Tom thrived in those environments. You know, this is going to be uncharted territory for Cam, but can't wait to see some of the coats that he's going to be rolling with in Beantown when you get to wintertime.
Yeah, be looking forward to it. Well, you know, Belichick will design the offense for him to run, and we'll see if he can carry on with it.
Well, and there's an element that they have not had in the last 20 years. Now, they haven't needed it because they've got six freaking Super Bowls with it, but it is a new layer to what the Patriots' offense could look like after Tom Brady, that if Cam Newton can still provide some of that mobility after foot surgery, then there's a dangerous element that the Patriots have never really had to their offense with a mobile quarterback. All right, it is 5 minutes to 8 o'clock. Evander Kane from the San Jose Sharks scheduled to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into that and much, much more draft lottery fallout right here on your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Black lives matter. We should be saying it every day. It's not political. This is not a political statement. It's a human rights statement. It's a fairness statement.
Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
8 o'clock, what's going on, boys and girls? Hour number three of your Ski Patrol here on this Monday, June 29th. James Cebulski, Mike English in for Perry Sulkowski, who is off this week. Evander Kane will join us in just a couple minutes from the San Jose Sharks as the Uninterrupted in Canada here features the Hockey Diversity Alliance with a roundtable conversation scheduled to air this morning here on their YouTube channel, so you can check that out. It'll feature Evander Kane, Akeem Aliyu, along with Wayne Simmonds, Trevor Daly, Matt Dumba from the Minnesota Wild, and several others. So that's coming up this morning on the YouTube channel. We'll catch up with Evander coming up in just a little bit. I guess we should also mention, Mike, this weekend, it was announced coming down last night, the captain of the Vancouver Canucks, Bo Horvat, has a baby boy.
Yeah, I didn't catch that news, but congratulations to him and his wife. That's great news.
Gunner John Horvat was born.
Gunner, what was his middle name?
John. And
John,
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was the name of his late grandfather as well. So,
Yeah, baby, yeah!
So, congratulations to the Canucks captain, who is now a dad. And we knew this was coming, and seems to time out well with the NHL's return to play, if and when they do get off the ground. On the heels of the NHL draft lottery, as word comes down that the Vancouver Canucks just might have a 12.5% chance at landing the first overall pick should they get bounced early by the Minnesota Wild. The draft lottery playing out in oh-so-funky fashion in what seemed to be the most National Hockey League thing that could have happened, right? I mean, to sit there and have a placeholder team win the draft lottery with the NHL's first event in over 100 days on Friday night. Detroit drops. Ottawa drops. L.A. climbs up. Of course the Kings. Of course the big market rock star team like the L.A. Kings would climb up to the second overall pick. But it's one of these teams that will get eliminated from the play-in round that will get bounced. Each of those eight teams that get eliminated, Mike, will have a chance at the first overall pick, which to me, it just felt so flawed. Felt so flawed for that to go down on Friday night.
Well, to me, it's an anomaly. The whole year's been an anomaly. I mean, it's been COVID infested. And given what has happened over the course of 2020, not just with the National Hockey League, but the entire sports world, the entire planet, in terms of dealing with this pandemic, it just seemed only natural this would not go smoothly. And such was the case on Friday night. But I'll tell you what, from a pure entertainment standpoint, loved it. Loved it. I thought it was had all the drama, as Corey referred to, in our 7 o'clock hour. I enjoyed it. I'm not an Ottawa fan. I'm not a Detroit fan. Not even a Kings fan. But from a pure drama standpoint, and I think it does add a little intrigue to the play-in round that you know one of those teams that is going to lose has a possibility of becoming a winner later with a 12.5% chance of taking that first overall pick. I liked it. I have to admit, I know Berkey ripped on it, but I liked it.
All right, well, let's get maybe some perspective from a guy who lives and breathes it as a National Hockey League player from the San Jose Sharks, former Vancouver Giant as well, Evander Kane. Evander, good morning, sir.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Appreciate you taking the time to catch up with us. Before we kind of get into some of the matters du jour, did you watch the lottery over the weekend?
I didn't. No, I was busy doing some other things, but I definitely saw the results afterwards.
And do you like the idea of a placeholder team getting a chance to have the top overall pick, or should it be reserved for the teams that struggled?
You know what? I'll be dead. I'll be straight with you. I could care less, unless we're, our team's on a part of that, obviously. So I could care less about the structure of the draft. That's just me being honest.
I like the honesty, though, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Evander's been busy doing other things. The Hockey Diversity Alliance has been busy, yeah. And they teamed up with Uninterrupted Canada. And I guess, Evander, your roundtable, which is being presented on YouTube, and it actually hits your YouTube channel on Uninterrupted right now. It hit the streaming platform at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 o'clock our time. Tell us a little bit about the Diversity Alliance and what this particular roundtable is about that's launching this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been real busy over the last 2 weeks since we came out publicly, and I think the roundtable discussion is our first true dialogue as an entire group, and I think there's some real good points and some real good topics that we touched on, and I really encourage everybody to watch and listen and try to get an understanding of where we're coming from. We've been super busy with a lot of the calls we've been on. It's tough to get things done as fast as you want with COVID and not being able to be all in the same place or be in the same room. But we've made some good progress thus far.
Evander, give me a sense of what you by having these conversations, what do you hope to accomplish from a hockey standpoint?
A lot. We have some lofty goals and some lofty expectations. We've been talking with Tom Rennie at Hockey Canada. I've had some really good calls with them, and we're looking forward to partnering with Hockey Canada. And the same can be said for the NHL. They're starting to become more receptive and starting to understand the importance of our group. And I think there's going to be a nice marriage between what we're doing and working with the NHL.
What are some of the things that you'd like to see Hockey Canada do then more? Because you grew up as a minor hockey player in Canada, and you know, having
sure
these
did.
Conversations, you've been pretty, and you've been pretty vocal over the last few weeks in social media, trying to kind of really help, try to provide that voice, I think, for the hockey community in terms of, you know, as people continue to try to, you know, resonate more with Black Lives Matter and try to say, okay, hey, look, we've got to find a way to appreciate everybody's diversity and be more about an equality status across the country and around the world for that matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a, at the end of the day, it's about growing the game of hockey, right? And you're not going to be able to grow the game if we're not a diverse sport, and you can't be a diverse sport if you have racism involved in your sport. So you have to start with step one, and that's trying to eliminate and suppress racism within our sport as best as we possibly can. We haven't done that. And some of the policies that we've presented and have suggested to Hockey Canada do that. And a lot of it is on the education side of things, and not some of it for players, but it's about coaches, it's about staff, it's about management, it's about parents first and foremost, because you know a 10-year-old isn't born racist, you know a 12-year-old doesn't just pick this out of their ass, you know they see it and they learn it from some other place, and I think educating the parents and making them a part of that process is extremely important. You know, it's also about creating opportunities for minorities within hockey. You know, hockey is a great game, and you don't have to be a player just to be a part of the game. So I think that's something that we've also touched on and are excited about as well.
Vander, can you give us an example of what some of the suggestions you've given to Tom Rennie and Hockey Canada, what kind of programs you guys have suggested that you would like them to implement?
Well, I think anytime there's an incident, I'm not going to get into the details, but those will be announced later on. But in terms of the parents, you know, I think it's very important for them to be a part of any sort of disciplinary process with a player involved in a racist incident. I think one of the suggestions we made, along with some supplemental discipline, is having an education program for that player. That player is required to attend, and the parent or parents being required to partake in that program along with their child. And I think that's a great way to hold not only the player accountable, but the parent accountable as well.
We talked to Vander Kane with us here on Sportsnet 650. Kevin Weeks was on our show a few weeks ago, and Kevin was pretty clear about saying, hey, look, you know, Canada's not immune here. And we've got some problems on this side of the country as well, as much as we've all kind of wanted to look at the U.S. and blame them and take aim and go, okay, look at all the problems they have. But Kevin had kind of laid it out pretty clear about some of the issues that he experienced here on this side of the border. Now, Kevin grew up in the Toronto area. You grew up on this side of the, you know, in Metro Vancouver and in the Lower Mainland. You know, a lot of people would look at Toronto and say, and Toronto is often kind of proclaim themselves as the most diverse city in the world. You know, I don't know if Vancouver necessarily has the diversity. You don't need me to tell you that, but did you see it as a kid growing up from your standpoint?
Of course. I mean, you know, if they're saying Toronto is the most diverse city in Canada and it's heavily going on there, you know, what do you think's going on in the West Coast or specifically, you know, with BC hockey? I mean, it happened, and it's not just to your face. It's a systemic racism throughout the minor hockey league associations, whether that was with me, whether that was with my dad in trying to coach teams and getting opportunities to stay and be a part of, you know, minor hockey. There were so many different instances where racism was, you know, a prominent factor in either decision-making. And I was always told from a young age that I have to be 10 times better than every other kid on the ice just to get the same opportunity. And that stayed true all the way until I got to the Western Hockey League.
Oh, Vander, can you give us an example of incidents that happened to you over the course of minor hockey?
Well, where would you like me to start? I mean, from parents calling me a monkey and saying I call me the N-word in the penalty box and tell me to they should chop my legs off and kill me and slit my throat? I mean, where would you like me to start?
How old were you there, Evander?
When you I would have been 10 years old. I was 10. It's my first year, Adam.
Your first year of Adam, and their parents second, yelling second racial year. Slurs at you.
Yep, correct. Yeah, and I've actually shared that story before in a little bit more detail. But again, it's funny how people are interested in listening now.
Yeah, it's definitely been that sort of time, right? It's here we are, and I think there's whatever the reason. Now you make that point that people are suddenly listening now, and it's funny because you know there's stuff that has been said on podcasts from commentators, from individuals who have said things or taken to Twitter or social media over the years, and stuff that may have been said 5 years ago that just flew under the radar that now comes back now, and we're speaking up. Do you at least appreciate the fact that people are listening now, or do you kind of, or are you partly of the opinion, where the hell were you 10 years ago or 5 years ago when some of this was going on?
Oh, 100%. You know, it's funny how everybody, you know, they want to be a part of the movement and they want to be on the right side of history. And I would say a lot of those people, whether it's players, staff, management, media, it's for all the wrong reasons. And it's all about, you know, covering your ass and protecting, you know, what you've, you know, possibly done in the past. And I think, you know, they're not getting called on that. And for me, it's okay. So you want to be a part of it? Well, let's see some action. Let's see some action. Let's see some real support here. And we'll see if that transpires. But, you know, a big part of it is the way things are portrayed in the narrative. And, you know, for us and our group with the Hockey Diversity Alliance, that was one of the big things, you know, we wanted to help accomplish, is changing that narrative and controlling the narrative, because it's been so skewed over the past number of years, especially since I've been in the league, and on obviously dating years back with the narrative of the black hockey player and the difference is in treatment regarding extremely similar situations over time.
Evander, let me ask you this. What can people do? What can we do to help in the way that, like you said, okay, like, you know, actions speak louder than words. Like, what can people do to help make a difference in certain scenarios? You know, and I'll give you an example from my own personal experience where, you know, I watched the protests, you know, not long after the George Floyd murder. And, you know, there was part of me, man, I want to do something. I feel like, you know, I want to march. But at the same time, you know, talk as a family and say, you know, there's a pandemic going on. Like, you know, like what's the answer? What's the right thing to do? In your mind, for people listening right now, what can people do?
I think one of the biggest things, and to be honest, easiest things you can do is hold people accountable. You know, when you talk about not only society, but hockey, you know, hold people accountable for their actions in an unbiased way. Hold people accountable who make comments, who have those type of ideals. It's the same thing with police. You know, there's so many good police. Hold those bad ones accountable. Mm-hmm. Call them out. Bring those people to light. Because, you know, they want to stay in the shadows, and they're happy with the status quo. And I think, you know, that's one thing you can do. And also at the same time, listening, learning, and educating yourself and listening to those players like myself, players like Joel Ward, players like Wayne Simmonds, that have gone through these type of instances and have come out on the right side of things. And I think, you know, it's easy to, you know, say, oh, we don't want to talk about the past. We want to just kind of move forward. But, you know, you can't fix the problem if you don't understand and listen to people about their past experiences and get a true understanding of the issues within the game and obviously within society.
Vander, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, has gotten support from the white players via Instagram statements, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a concern that that support is genuine? And secondly, have you heard from any of the white players since all this emerged over the course of the last month or so?
Yeah, I definitely have. I think there have been, obviously a large number but it's a seventh of the league, but, about 100 players reportedly that have come out with statements. I think it's a good thing. I think it's good on them. I think obviously some statements were more personalized and genuine than others. At the same time, we have to understand what those exactly are. And I have had players reach out to me, whether it's ex-teammates or current teammates, and there is that support for our group. And again, we're only 2 weeks into what we're doing, and we're still trying to build our infrastructure within our organization. And, we look forward to having that support and people putting their name on the dotted line and being a part of what we're doing.
I guess that's the slippery part of this, where Vander Kane with us here on Sportsnet 650. You're only 2 weeks into this, but I'm sure this is where, as you talked about, where you probably want to be ready to go, because if there was ever a time to really get people to move on board and to put their name on it, I guess now would be the time, right?
Yeah, we've made a lot of progress behind the scenes in the last 2 weeks, and we're really excited about some of the work that we're going to be able to present to the National Hockey League and to organizations like Hockey Canada and USA Hockey too. They got a big problem down there, and Hockey Canada and Tom Rennie so far have been extremely receptive, and their will and want to work with us and to partner with us, and we look forward to that same opportunity and partnership with USA Hockey as well.
You going forward now, there's, you look at everything else that's going on in the world. You as a league, over almost about 110 days since the game was kind of paused back in the middle of March. What do you make of everything right now, where you guys have to decide on what an updated CBA, hub cities, return to play protocol, salary caps, escrow? What's going on in your world with that right now?
Yeah, that's a whole different conversation. I don't think anybody really knows what's going to transpire. I think obviously it would be great to finish the year. When you talk about the CBA negotiations and whatnot, my opinion is it's extremely hard to put something together long-term, for sure, with having such an uncertain future and look into the future. I think it would be an error in judgment on definitely the player's part to do that. But, I'm only one player, and I guess we'll make that decision.
Would you have an issue going back right now? Like, would you have an issue going back to play? Like, going into a bubble like everybody's talking about?
Let's just put it this way. I'm if there was a year to miss the playoffs, not that you ever want to, this was the year.
Yeah, that's
totally fair. Understandable. Hey, listen, Evander, one final question for you. If anybody wants to watch the roundtable, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, the beginning, it's been released now. It's on the Uninterrupted YouTube channel. How do people get there to watch it?
You dial up your computer and you go to the link, and you can go to any of our Instagrams. I'm sure we'll post links. I'm sure it'll be all over Twitter. You can go to the Uninterrupted website. People are pretty tech savvy, so just dial it up and take some time and check it out, because there's some good dialogue. We touched some good topics, maybe some topics that some of these trolls won't understand or get or like, but I think it's a good forum, and obviously really happy to partner with Uninterrupted and have them be a part of it with the platform they have.
Yeah, my partner here, Mike, is still on dial-up there, Evander, so you'll just have to
get my dial full.
Hey, listen, okay, you're also part of the NHL 20 Bracket Challenge, and I'm in this tournament as well. I just took out Roman Josi. I think you had a win in round one, too, didn't you?
I did have a win in round one. I've actually already played round two, but I'm going to wait to dive into the results before it gets unleashed.
All right, I've got my round two matchup with Zach Werenski later on this week as well. So depending on how things play out,
best of luck.
Yeah, good luck to you as well. Because if we meet, you're going to need it.
Yeah, I believe that. I'm not the best player at PlayStation, so.
I feel like I am I'm the oldest competitor in the tournament here, so I don't know if that helps me or not. But
you got the most experience. There you go.
Savvy, veteran savvy. Nice to catch up with you. Great conversation, and you know I'll give you a lot of credit, Evander. I mean, to see it's been a long time since we first kind of met at the World Juniors, going back I guess about 12 years ago. But to see how much you've grown, and to see how you know, really over the last couple of years, to see how you've matured, you know, helping out, delivering pizzas down in the downtown east side, doing that, and to be a voice at a time that I think we need to see a lot of athletes and just more people from a societal standpoint to step up. You're doing a great job raising your voice, so good on you.
Yeah, thanks. And I think, you know, it's, you know, this is, you know, people always talk about character, and give credit to guys, you know, when it comes to their character. You know, character isn't about reputation. You know, reputation is bullshit. Reputation is somebody's opinion of you. You know, character is the true mark. And you know, you really see what somebody's character is about when you go through tough times and when things aren't easy. And I think that's the type of leadership that you need at this time, and that's what I'm trying to do. So, you know, I encourage everybody to try to be a leader, and you know, it's going to be a great judge of character, a test for that, with what happens over the next couple of months specifically.
Be safe out there, and nice to catch up again.
Thanks.
Thanks,
Evander Kane from the San Jose Sharks. Again, the Uninterrupted Canada presenting the latest digital roundtable, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, the beginning. And that drops this morning on their YouTube channel. Evander Kane, Akeem Aliyu, Wayne Simmons, Trevor Daly, Matt Dumba, Chris Stewart, Nazem Kadri, Anthony Duclair, Joel Ward, among others, taking part in this conversation, a conversation that is still needed. And we've seen, you know, there was a great march featuring hundreds of people over the weekend in Ladner, not far from us here in South Delta, over the weekend, Mike. So people continuing to lend their voices and continuing to speak out. So, yeah, nice to see it. Evander's done a lot of growing up over the last few years and really stepping up to be one of the leaders and one of the more vocal ones in the National Hockey League world over the last few days. And not just the National Hockey League, but, you know, Hockey Canada and just the hockey community as a whole globally.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the stories he gave us playing minor hockey here. I was taken back a bit.
25 minutes after 8 o'clock here on this Monday morning. James, Mike, much more to dive into from a busy, busy weekend in the world of sports, including the National Hockey League. We'll continue the conversation Canuck style in a moment here on Sportsnet 650.
This is the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Mike English.
8:31. Beautiful sunny skies out there this morning. It's shaping up to be a spectacular day in Metro Vancouver. 23, but it's going to feel closer to 26 with the Humidex. Finally, summer is here as we are 2 days away from Canada Day. It's funny, I was picking up my my kids yesterday, Mike, and my going over to my ex-wife's place, and I said, "Oh, you doing anything? You doing anything with the? You know, you doing anything for Canada Day?" And she kind of looks at me, it's like, "When's that?" And I think
it's weird, though.
You know what? In fairness to her, and I'm not trying to be a jerk to. I'm just thinking a lot of people are kind of like, "When's Canada Day? Oh, Canada Day is this week? Oh yeah, oh, okay."
So which one is the long weekend? It falls right in the middle. So is it this past weekend, or is it the next weekend? Or do you take them both and say to hell with it?
Yeah, I think if you're a teacher, you're taking both, right? And then some, after going through all your Zoom calls and I think that was a very unique couple months for teachers trying to figure it all out, and for a lot of parents with homeschooling. But beyond that, I think this week feels like it's kind of the start of the holidays. So I'm going to say probably this coming weekend. I'd be shocked if many people are going back Thursday and Friday from a work standpoint.
Hey, do you remember this 4 years ago today? The most explosive 23 minutes in National Hockey League history off the ice. And I just was reminded of this a few moments ago. But the Taylor Hall trade, the PK Subban trade, and Steven Stamkos signing, all of that happened in a 23-minute span in the noon hour here at BC 4 years ago. It's just a crazy 1 hour of NHL news. It just bombarded the country. First, Taylor Hall gets traded for Adam Larson at 12:34 BC time. 20 minutes later, Shea Weber gets traded to Montreal for PK Subban. 3 minutes after that, Steven Stamkos signs with the Tampa Bay Lightning when all the rumors were suggesting he was going to Toronto. I just remember that day, and this news was coming in, flying in, and everybody's trying to adjust to, we just heard this news and this news comes in. It was a crazy, crazy 23 minutes.
The Stamkos to me was the least relevant, right? Because it was,
yeah.
I think it was by that point, people were starting to reach for cigarettes going, I just need to breathe for a second. Right. It was just to kind of see how it all played out. But the trades, the deals were the blockbusters, right? Weber and PK, obviously, for the Preds to pull the trigger on Shea Weber. Although you kind of felt like there was a bit of an animosity that had been created after Weber had signed that offer sheet going back into 2012. The Taylor Hall one, and that one felt so one-sided for a couple of years. And you know, Larson's a solid defenseman. He's obviously a top four defenseman, but just how it played out, it was so one sided a win for the New Jersey Devils because Taylor Hall finally exploded into the player that everybody was hoping that he was going to be when he was taken first overall in 2010. Remember the whole Taylor or Tyler? Do you take Taylor Hall or do you take Tyler Seguin? And for that to kind of play out the way it did, it was the trades to me that were so mind-blowing. And then Stamkos ultimately re-upping in that. But that's 4 years ago today. That 23 minutes that kind of shook the world. I don't know. Would those 23 minutes be more impactful than, you know, the Gretzky trade when that officially went down in 1988. I mean, I feel like even then, like nothing was as shocking to me as when Gretzky ultimately got traded.
No, I agree with that. But to have three major transactions like that take place in a span of 23 minutes is unheard of. And it was unbelievable when it came down because you're just reacting to one and then another one happens and you're thinking, is this for real? Really?
Well, I'm trying to
and
remember
then Stamkos
the
signs, who had been rumored to be going to Toronto. He had a deal done, everything else. And then all of a sudden he re-signed in Tampa. And obviously the tax benefits of signing in Tampa is what got him to sign on the dotted line down there.
I'm trying to remember the trade or the timing of it back in the Jeff Carter trade and the Mike Richards trade with Philly. And then didn't they sign Breeze Galov right around that same time as well?
This is Philly we're talking about?
Yeah. And do you remember that? Right. It was right before the draft. It was like a day before the draft, I think it was, in 2011 or 2012. And all of a sudden, it was like, boom, boom, how the Flyers, you know, move two significant pieces. And that was kind of around that whole controversy of Dry Island and not long
right,
after
exactly.
their Stanley Cup appearance in 2010. But even still, how all of a sudden Jeff Carter was sent to Columbus and then, you know, Mike Richards was quickly, you know, packaged as well and just how it all kind of played out. I'm trying to remember the exact how it all went down, but it was right around this time going back in I think it was 2011 or 2012, but that was kind of a
holy cow, what just happened here? And for those to kind of play out. But yeah, the 4 years ago, I mean, if you were on social media in that moment and your head was spinning 2 days before free agency, right? And the PK and Shea Weber, I mean, you just don't see deals like that anymore, right? The death of the hockey deal is kind of coming.
It's still being debated, like who won that deal? I mean, it looks like Montreal did now, but at the time, that certainly wasn't the case in Montreal. They were not happy to see PK Subban dealt to Nashville.
No. I think there were a lot of Habs fans were really upset over that one. And hey, I mean, you look at some of the injuries that Shea Weber had endured, and boy, how painful that contract was starting to look. You know, even more than what it is with the amount of term on that deal, but. You know, I mean, Shea Weber is still, he's got another 6 years beyond this, right? At $7.5 million. And Shea Weber's getting up there too, right? I mean, he'll be 35 this summer. But at this point, when you look at Nashville's already turned the page on PK. You know, Shea Weber's contract doesn't expire for another 6 years. Doesn't expire until the summer of 2026. And that cap hit, like if the cap had climbed another seven, you know, if it was climbing another 4 to 8 million, you know, this summer that was initially supposed to be, remember when that was before the pandemic hit, you know, maybe that contract looks milder and milder and milder, but now all of a sudden, like that's still a significant cap hit now with the cap staying flat for the foreseeable future.
But you remember the Habs leading up to that week kept denying, PK is not being traded. And then he's traded. Now, you correct me, but I think Jeff Merrick had told us this, and we've been told this a couple of times, that the Canucks were in the running for PK Subban at that time as well. But obviously, the deal didn't happen. I believe Jeff Merrick had suggested a deal was done and was about to happen, and then all of a sudden it was thrown into reverse and did not happen, obviously.
8:39 on this Monday morning. You know, we've been asking you this morning on our poll question, and it came up a few times over the weekend whether or not you like the idea of would you prefer the Canucks beating the Wild, or would you prefer the Canucks being in contention for the first overall pick? 65% of you are taking a win over the Wild rather than a chance for a 12.5% chance for the Lafreniere first overall selection lottery win. Just a crazy weekend how it played out with the draft lottery, and it does feel so incredibly flawed as to how it played out, Mike, to see where it's kind of gone and where it ultimately evolves. I think the NHL still needs to find a way to tweak the draft lottery, and obviously this is a unique set of circumstances, but knowing what we know now, like, for eight teams that are going to get a shot to go after the Stanley Cup when the NHL ultimately resumes play, you know, do those teams really need the first overall pick? I don't think so.
So what would you do? What would you have done in this case? Just keep it to those seven teams?
I would have kept it to the seven. I would have kept it to the seven, and honestly, I don't even think the seven teams need it. You know, five teams. The bottom five. Like, you've pretty much narrowed down five pretty crappy hockey teams for that particular year, right? If you're in the bottom five of the National Hockey League, you're there for a reason. And it gives a little bit of insulation for those, if you're trying to say, oh, you're preventing the teams to tank. Look, the idea of going out, like, if you're a fan of your team, like, that's painful to sit there and just look at a lost year and say, you know, throwing your arms up. Like, and I'm sure, like, that's a financial hit for an organization as well, right? It doesn't exactly benefit. Your team's out of it. Like, look at the TV ratings for the last half decade for the Vancouver Canucks. You think they even come close to what they were in 2011 or 2010 or 2012 for that matter? No, like, those things had dropped in half, maybe even less than that. I don't have the exact ratings in front of me, but I'm telling you, Mike, you saw those numbers. They plummeted massively. That impacts bottom lines.
No, absolutely. You know what? Draft picks sell hope, right? I mean, that's what they do. And as much as I don't feel that bad for the Ottawa organization, I do feel badly for the Ottawa fans who have been through this for the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, it wasn't that long ago they were in the Cup final. I do feel badly for them. I mean, Lafreniere would have been a great, great asset for that club to have, just given the French-English thing there. He would be the perfect marketing tool for that franchise.
All right, 8:42. We've got our winners before we turn the page on today's edition. We'll get to that next right here on Sportsnet 650.
I want winners.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
The winners on the starting lineup on Sportsnet 650.
8:47. Before we dive into the winners, Mike, I want to share this quickly. Somebody just sent me this on Twitter. At Nux Jays, with a link to sign the petition, Canucks to wear skate jersey in playoffs.
And, really?
They're trying to get 500 signatures for this, and they're up to 231 as we speak. Check that, they're up to 235, 237. Trying to get up to at least 500. I feel like you need a little bit more than that, but... you know what? It's a good start anyway. I'd be on board with that. It's funny. I remember talking to the kids about this a few weeks ago and asking them, like, what jersey do you like best? Do you like the whale? Do you like the one with the orca on it? Do you like the 50th anniversary with the stick going back to the old days? Or do you like the black with the flying skate? All four of the girls in the house all said black. Black, black, black.
Yeah, I've heard that too. A lot of people like it. I have to admit, when I originally came out, I wasn't too enthused about it. I'm old school. I prefer the stick jersey. But I'm curious what their record was with those black jerseys on. I'll tell you what, if they're winning with it on, let's use them in the playoffs. Unless you're one of the 35% who wants to blow the first play-in round and get the draft pick.
Well, the downside about the flying skate is the whites are terrible. Like, those white jerseys suck. Like, they just do, plain and simple.
I don't even remember the white ones.
The black pop, they're kind of badass, but the whites are terrible. So I would be on board with the black, but you can't go with the white ones because they stink.
Okay, let's go with black.
There you go. So there's a link... you know, we'll try to throw it out there on our Sportsnet 650 account if you're interested and try to add your name to the list if you want to see the Blacks up and running. Okay, where are you going for your winner, Mike?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go back to Friday night and the NHL lottery.
The number one overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to a team yet to be determined coming from the qualifying round in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
So my winner is, no, it's not the placement team, not one of the eight placement teams who will lose the play-in round of the National Hockey League playoffs and be given a 12.5% chance of getting that first pick, which, of course, will be Lafreniere. No, my winners are my compatriots at Sportsnet, who, following that, as you say, disaster of a lottery draft, everything just turned chaos. Ron McLean, Elliot Friedman, who had the Unabomber look going, the Ted Kaczynski look, and Sam Cosentino. Now, when that post show started, they were supposed to have Lafreniere as a guest, Bill Daly as a guest. But given what happened with the placement team winning and Lafreniere having no idea at all what team he was going to end up with, decided, you know what, I'm pulling the chute. I am not talking about this. Nothing good can come from this. Bill Daly, he's in a state of shock, too. He just says, you know what? I'm not talking to anybody. I'm getting out of here. So McLean, Friedman, Cosentino, all their guests pull the chute. They're scrambling to put together a show, and they did it. A few technical issues here and there, but they managed to pull it off. And so I'm going to give my winner to three amigos in the Sportsnet studios on Friday night.
Not bad. A lot of tap dancing going down, and they pulled it off, and that's why they're as good as they are and deserve the
well, you
big,
know what it's like,
robust
James,
paychecks.
To you all the time on television. Happens on this show. Like, sometimes you got to tap dance, and they had to do it for a half hour.
Yeah, and did a wonderful job of it. Yes, as flawed as the draft lottery formula was, they did a great job. My winner this morning, man, I'm going to Saturday night, and...
I got to give a double winner because it's a win for Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker, who gave anybody who was watching on Saturday night a great case for the 2020 Fight of the Year.
Unanimous decision, Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
Man, people thought that this had potential to be a good fight going into this, Mike. What a freaking war to sit down and watch this unfold. And how, that second round is easily your round of the year. And it would you might make an early candidate for round of the decade with the way that these guys exchanged in round two and how they were able to go for another three rounds. This fight had a little bit of everything as Poirier pulls out a unanimous decision. I thought the right guy won in the end, but boy, oh boy, what a special fight. And at times almost uncomfortable, the shots that both fighters landed on each other before they ultimately went the distance. But what a fight by Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker. As much as we've complained about Dana White and just how determined he was to get these fights up and running, you know, they pulled them off, and there were some really good fights over the last several weeks that they were able to run with the UFC for the last, 5 weeks going with this. They're going to take a week off, and then they go to Fight Island in about 12 days from now. Yaz Island over into the Middle East.
Well, I never saw the fight, but I'll tell you what, you got me intrigued now. Poirier Hooker, I'm going to look it up as soon as we sign off here.
Oh, my gosh. Do yourself a favor. Even just, if nothing else, watch the 5 minutes of round two. Unbelievable how these two went at it in a lightweight battle. All right, we got to get out of here. We are back at it on Tuesday. It's for Tuesday, everybody. We will talk to you then right here on Sportsnet 650. See ya.